It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. At 2:30, why does September 14th matter? Some notable food holidays that we'll talk about. And in mere minutes, do Longhorns and Aggies need to reset their expectations for this football season? We'll discuss. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is the Aggie himself, Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number three, and a lot of stuff going on today. Obviously, a lot of football. Week one of the NFL finishes last night. Raiders over Ravens as we get ready for week two there. Week three of college football. We'll dig into that Longhorn-Aggie discussion coming up. Obviously, a lot of folks around these parts talking Longhorns today, and we're trying to find out if your expectation level has changed a little bit. Before we get into that, Trey, how about this for the first line of a story that I pulled up regarding the NBA. This is the least shocking sentence you're ever going to hear me read. Are you ready?
Yes.
NBA players will not be mandated to get vaccinated against COVID-19, league sources tell ESPN.
Well, that's weird.
That is the least shocking thing I have read. Wait a minute. You mean the NBA and its Players Association are not going to allow that? They're not going to let the league mandate vaccines? My mind is blown, Trey. I thought the league had them by the short hairs. I thought they controlled. Oh, wait, that's not them. That's a different league. That's the NFL. I'm sorry. Yeah. And the NFL hasn't even been able to get to a mandated status or whatever. When we saw these first NBA stories come out about the cities, the local guidelines and stuff, we started to wonder, but we knew deep down they weren't going to be able to mandate this. They're still going over what they are going to make them do, but they will not mandate vaccinations for their players.
Are they still going to go back to segregation era rules for the unvaccinated guys, though, Chad?
I don't think.
Back of the bus. Different lockers, different water fountains, different spot in the cafeteria to eat, not allowed to mingle with your vaccinated counterparts.
I don't know. I don't know if they figured all that out. I'm reading here that roughly 85% of players are vaccinated, according to the league. And the preliminary memo that you're talking about in early September did talk about protocols, including having lockers far from vaccinated teammates or having to eat, fly, and ride buses in different sections. The protocols are not final and are still subject to talks with the NBAPA.
Yeah, we said at the moment that the NBA, one, it was stupid of them to even suggest such things, but it would be shocking if they followed through on that.
Yeah, so this just in, Chris Paul and LeBron and the guys, they have flexed back a little bit. They have responded in the way we thought they would. All right, Trey, let's get into this football thing. We come out of week two for the Longhorns where Arkansas took it to them. 40-21, it didn't even feel quite like that. It maybe in many ways it felt worse. And now there's going to be a quarterback switch, whether you believe that's a big deal or not, whether you believe it's the right move or not, unless there's an injury or you are, I don't know, the Niners maybe, or who else is doing it right now? Oh, Florida. Dan Mullen's doing it a little bit, playing two quarterbacks. Good move going into the Alabama game, by the way. That's what you want to be doing. It is pretty rare. If there's no injury involved and you are switching quarterbacks, then something's up.
Right.
And clearly we know something's up with Texas. So for Texas and for A&M, I would ask fans today, do you change your expectations for your teams? Let's start with us. These are our teams. For you as a Longhorn fan, expectations change any? Because you had them at around 8 wins, so you weren't on the super high level anyway. Are you still at about the same spot, or do you feel like you need to alter a little bit?
I am, because the Big 12, I am at the same spot, because the Big 12 as a conference is not great right now. So Texas is fortunate that as they begin this rebuild with the new coaching staff in place, that the conference is kind of following suit in terms of being a little bit down this year. Even Iowa State, who was a top 10 team to begin the season, they are clearly not that at this point. There is one team in this conference that you have to be scared of, and that's Oklahoma, which is sadly the case most years. And Texas is in that second to third tier of teams that is going to be scratching and clawing for that second spot in the Big 12 championship game. And I could very easily see them at 8-4. I could see them getting it together and finishing 9-3. 10-2 may be a bit of a stretch right now, It's still possible, though. That gives them one more loss, which you kind of expect to be in Dallas in that first or second weekend of October. But the rest of the conference can be beaten. So it's about which Texas team is going to show up. The team that we saw versus Louisiana, which looked like gangbusters, that had people like me feeling more optimistic about the season, or the crap that we saw in Fayetteville on Saturday night. Because if it's more of the latter, then even 8 wins might be a stretch.
Yeah, it was obviously it was bad. Not that they lost, how they lost definitely mattered. Somebody texted in, they've changed to 8-4. They were at 10-2. I went 10-2 on the regular season for Texas, and I'd probably notch that down to a 9. I'll wait before maybe going down to 8, but that would give them 2 more losses somewhere along the line. I thought Oklahoma was going to beat them, and I thought Iowa State was going to beat them. Even though that game in Ames still makes it really tough, and you're giving Matt Campbell all that time to get ready for a November matchup. So if it's still those two, I'll probably reassess to 9. But the big worry, Trey, to me, if you're a Texas fan, is are we just about to witness another one of Saban's guys that just can't cut it as a head coach? Are we witnessing this again? I know Saban's going through this new thing where he's cleaning coaches. I get that.
Yeah.
And Ole Miss fans are hoping that he's fully cleaned a guy like Lane Kiffin, and Kiffin's going to really find it, really blossom as a head coach. But I was going through it today as I'm driving in. Saban guys that are legit, that coached for him and then are legit. To me, there's 2.
Jimbo.
It's Jimbo and Kirby.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it? Because there are fans in South Carolina and Gainesville that will tell you it's not Will Muschamp. There are fans in Tennessee that will tell you it's not Pruitt. And
Pruitt's not even there anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not that guy. And then, you got fans of Texas going, oh, wait a second, hold on. This is not what this is it? Because I gave him too much credit. I'm hoping I was still right for Texas fans' sake. I thought he would make adjustments more than I saw. I didn't think he'd freeze in a game as a play caller. I didn't think he would crunch in and get super conservative as a play caller. I thought he would continue to be aggressive. And at least for one game, I was wrong about that. So coming out of it, I mean, it's just some of the things that are now that he's saying, some of the play calling stuff. It's like, okay, wait a second. Are we're not witnessing another one of these, are we? Because I was giving him a little more respect than I was those other guys, the Pruitts of the world and even the Muschamps of the world. I hope I'm not wrong. I hope I wasn't wrong on him. Maybe it was a one game blip, but huge issues in that game.
It is just the second game of his tenure. The offensive line, their ceiling is very low. Their ceiling is like that of a garden apartment where if you're 6 feet and you're standing up, you can touch the ceiling if you stretch your arms in the air. So unfortunately, he is limited with what he can do. And, as difficult as it is for us not to overreact and be prisoners of the moment from game to game when things look as good as they did in game one or as bad as they did in game two, we still need to give this some time. We still need to let this play out. We need to give these coaches an opportunity to show that they understand how to adjust on both sides of the ball. Because Kwiatkowski had a bad game defensively, too. It didn't start out bad, but it turned bad pretty quickly when he kept daring Arkansas to run with even boxes versus stacking the box and forcing KJ Jefferson to throw it a little bit more, especially some of those intermediate and deep balls that he seems to struggle so much with. So I feel like these coaches, starting with Steve Sarkisian, are more capable of looking themselves in the mirror and making those adjustments in the previous regime, because Tom Herman was terrible at that. That guy had excuse after excuse when clearly the problem was him, and Steve Sarkisian has owned it to a certain degree. Now, is the Rice game this weekend a good test to see if they can get things back on track? No, and I don't think Texas Tech is either, especially because that game is in Austin. But a week after that, TCU, I think, is that game in Fort Worth this year? Or
correct.
In Austin?
Ugh, Fort Worth.
God, that game's in Fort Worth, too.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great test to see where this football team is. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably have a better answer for you at that point as far as what I expect out of this football team the rest of the way. Because right now I just don't know. So yeah. I have to fall back on the 8-4 prediction from preseason.
So this texter says, still believe in this team, and the staff horns up 9-3.
I will say that if the stat that was given to us on the text line yesterday about Steve Sarkisian's road record as a head coach,
like 12-23 or whatever that number was,
if that stat is legit, that is troubling. And that's not something, for whatever reason, with all the stats that we hear these days, I hadn't heard that one just yet. That's a problem because his team did not look like they were ready to go on the road.
I'll double check on some of those numbers tonight. We'll talk about that as the week goes on. I'm interested in that one too. So then in terms of the A&M thing with the with a quarterback out for an extended period, based on what I've seen so far, I was with 10-2 there. I predicted history where Texas and Texas A&M would each win 10 for only the second time ever in the same year. And now I'm going to have to kick them down to 9 as well. And I had them losing to Bama and LSU and Baton Rouge. Now I'm going to add one more game in there based on this offensive line losing 4 starters. And by the way, when they say Kenyon Green is an All-American right tackle, he's not. He's their right tackle, but he was an All-American at guard. Remember, they've kicked him out to right tackle.
That's a good point.
That's a distinction to make. I didn't love the – I mean, even with what happened against Colorado, the idea that that offense looked that bad for almost the entire game, and they needed their running back to make 2 big catches for them. He made 1 big catch. Quarterback made 1 big throw. I'll give him each credit. But the fact that that was necessary tells me something about the offense. And then you just look at that schedule. I got to give Auburn enough respect. They're coming to College Station, but I got to give them enough respect. We'll see this week. Auburn at Penn State. I've heard some people picking Auburn to go win that game. Mm. Bo Nix and Harsin and that crew are scoring 60 a game against garbage. Mm. Let's see what they can do against Penn State. But with A&M, I trust that defense enough, though, to say they can hold it at 9. I still think 10 is possible. Possible if the offense comes together. But I'll change my expectations for them as well. I'll click it down to 9. It is still true that Texas and Texas A&M have never gone back-to-back 9 wins or more at the same time. It's never happened.
That is bizarre.
So that bit of history could still restart this year as well. But I'll kick them down as well based on what I've seen.
See, the big thing for you guys right now is what does Zach Calzada look like with a full week of practice as the number one guy?
Right.
He was understandably caught off guard with having to be thrust into game action on the road like that last weekend. And the pressure showed for him most of the game until those last couple of throws. Now, one was an excellent catch by Spiller, but then he made a nice play on that game-winning touchdown. So does he settle in a little bit better with a full week of practice under his belt of getting to run with the ones? We'll find out, and that's going to go a long ways in helping to determine what A&M is capable of the rest of the way. And I'm glad for you guys that you get to Mexico this weekend at home.
So am I.
Because it's like getting to practice against the JV before the games really start to matter.
My God. Arkansas is 2 weeks away.
Right.
Then it's Mississippi State. And then it is Alabama for the Aggies. So, yeah, we'll see what all that looks like. Again, the part A&M has that Texas doesn't have right now, and obviously this is a team at a different level right now in college football. They were supposed to be top 5. Their defense is better than Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You can count on that if you're an A&M fan more than what Texas can count on. But that offensive line is a concerning thing. Go back and watch. If you want to go back and watch that Kent State game and ask yourself, why did Haynes King have a bad night? I'm not saying it was all on his offensive line. Quarterbacks make their own mistakes. But he was weirdly dancing in that game.
Huh.
He was weirdly under pressure. And what else did I say to you, Trey, after game one? I was freaked out by Weidemeyer in game one. He looked lost on some routes. It didn't look like there was good communication. When it was him and Calzada in Denver, it looked like they'd never met.
Yeah.
It looked like they had no idea what was going on. Calzada threw a ball 3 yards over Weidemeyer's head. It felt like every other play.
Was that? Yeah. I remember one specifically that was, I felt like it was about 20 yards downfield where he missed badly. And Weidemeyer was open enough to where he could have gotten the completion there.
But later in the game, they had a really nice route out to the right side right before that fumble into the end zone. So they made, you know, strides in the game. Can they adjust enough for the schedule that's coming is really the question for A&M. Haynes King is out like 6 to 8 weeks, something like that. That's one report. But basically, think of it as mid-October. After the Alabama game, is kind of that area when they think he could be back. So we'll see what happens there. And you can let us know on the text line, 337-3776, whether you are a fan of the Longhorns or the Aggies. Have your expectations changed any based on what you have seen? Somebody texted in, expectations, Texas fan, have reverted back to preseason level. It went from 7 to 8 wins pre-Louisiana to 9 to 10 post-Louisiana. Back to 7 to 8. R.I.P. Norm. Just an added comment there. Norm McDonald, dead at the age of 61 today. That's been a part of our show as well. We played that Norm from the ESPYs in 98 during Where Are We At in Society Today, because Trey, like myself, and I know many of you, big fan of Norm McDonald, hard to believe that he is gone after a nine-year battle, a secret battle we're just finding out about with cancer. Norm McDonald, dead at the age of 61, or so the Germans would have us believe. Coming up, September 14th, and why it matters to us. It is not only the day that Norm McDonald dies, but got a couple other birthdays we might hit. We also have some food days. You know, we like to break the food down a little bit, including a food today that sounds like a really good snack, but is it? We'll talk about it on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
I was enjoying it. I was smiling, but you're right. This is a little bit of a... I had to check to make sure my shoes were on with this song going. What do you got here, Trey?
This is Nat Turner Rebellion. The song is called Laugh to Keep from Crying. And we are playing this because it is another shameless podcast promotion Tuesday. New episode of Books on Pod out as of this morning with Nick Scown, who is the co-director of a new Vice documentary called Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11. How did the September 11th attacks affect comedy in America? And which comedians and what jokes helped the country rebound in the weeks, months, and years that followed? Well, you can find out by listening to our chat at booksonpod.com.
There's also a great sequence that, and Kevin Dunn will love this entire documentary if he hasn't seen it yet. Kevin Dunn's the one that turned me on to Vice because of the Action Bronson stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now I watch everything on Vice. But there's a sequence where they go over individual jokes that were told after 9/11. And then they have a comedian watch the joke, a different comedian, and then react to it. And the two that stood out were Greg Giraldo, one of Kevin's favorites, the late, great Greg Giraldo, delivers a joke about 9/11 that is incredible. Well-written, well-constructed, and then somebody breaks that down. And then I'd forgotten about the Louis C.K. joke, but there's a Louis C.K. joke in there.
Oh, man.
About 9/11 that I'd forgotten about, and they have Cedric the Entertainer reacting to it, and it is fantastic. Great documentary. If you haven't seen Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11, you need to check it out. The Gilbert Gottfried moment, if you don't know about that, is an important one to know. But then all just how every bit of comedy reacted, how SNL reacted, when did they come back and start doing it, Letterman, other talk shows, all of those things, Jon Stewart and The Daily Show and all those different things. It's a really good documentary. All right, and unfortunately, speaking of comedy, we had a horrible story in the world of comedy today. Norm McDonald is dead at the age of 61. Why don't we just start right there with Why Today Matters. It is September 14th. Here we go.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
All right, so yeah, Norm McDonald dead at the age of 61. Such a terrible story to hear about earlier today. A battle with cancer that lasted about 9 years. So if you like Norm McDonald, watch some of your favorite Norm McDonald stuff.
I'm going down a Norm McDonald rabbit hole on YouTube tonight, I can already guarantee you, because yeah. I played that ESPY monologue, which was one of the all-time best, and there were a couple of other things that popped up of him actually hosting award shows, so I'm assuming that he was firing on the crowd there, too.
He probably was. Yeah, go check that out. We've had people texting in today that they saw Norm at Cap City back in the day and that it was one of their favorite comedy shows ever. So Norm Macdonald, dead at the age of 61. I also believe I saw correctly today that this is one of those days that I want to forget. I've never committed the date to memory for some reason because it was so horrific. But I saw Chris Bennett tweet out today, today's the anniversary of the day Sean Adams died, I think.
Oh, man.
It was today, and we had the USC story today with Clay Helton. I'll always think of Texas and USC when I think of Sean Adams, because that's what we were getting ready for that game in, 2017, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
I think I have the math right on that. A terrible day for sports radio in this town, and obviously for the friends and family of a great guy in Sean Adams. That was so horrible 4 years ago. Norm Macdonald dying today. We also have, Trey, a few things of, I feel like every time I see this word, I think of the show that's not on anymore, The Cosby Show. One of my favorites growing up, but now for obvious reasons it can't be on television. But it's Eat a Hoagie Day.
Oh, yeah.
National Eat a Hoagie Day, Cliff Huxtable.
He used to build a hoagie, Chad.
He made me appreciate the hoagie. I wanted that long, like the long bun was the key. That long bread.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was great. Sonic had a sandwich when I was a kid. They did a ham and cheese sandwich on the long bread.
Oh, really?
I thought I was so fancy eating it. Thought I was so fancy on the ham and cheese. But hoagies, I can do that. Just pile it all up.
Big fan of the sandwich. It's my favorite
stuff.
Vehicle to consume ingredients.
There it is.
And the hoagie, yeah, it's the long version of the sandwich. But I'm on board with just about any sandwich.
Okay, what about cream-filled donuts? I think we both can kill some donuts, but cream-filled?
I don't need the cream in my donut. If I'm going donut, it's already going to be glazed, so it's going to be super sugary to begin with. If I'm adding any moisture to the donut, I'm probably going milk, but I very rarely need that much more moisture. I don't need cream in my donuts, Chad.
Here's my thing on cream-filled donuts and jelly donuts. I'm not telling you that I wouldn't like them at all. I'm telling you I'm staying away on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm fearful for what it could be.
Oh, I see. You're worried that you're going to like it too much.
I'm fearful that it could become, like, for me, what heroin became for Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue back in the day, where I just can't get enough.
See, this is why I don't keep peanut M&Ms in my house.
There it is.
Why I can't keep Candy Crush on my phone. There's just certain things you can't stay away from.
It's why I had to admit to myself months and months and months ago that occasionally, I can have one individual bag of Wild Berry Skittles to take to a movie, to watch one movie, but I can't buy the big bag and leave it in the house. Because if it's there and I walk by it, I'll grab some.
Yep.
So that's why I try to have things like, you know, almonds or pistachios or something that's better for me. If I'm going to walk by and just grab a little handful, it can't be Skittles anymore. I used to do it all the time. And it was just, you know, I was growing exponentially.
I can just hear you getting fatter.
Oh, my God.
It's a David Spade line from Tommy Boy.
I can hear you getting fatter. The other one, supposed to be on the healthy side, is the Ants on a Log. It's National Ants on a Log Day. Trey, do you know anyone's mother that ever took the time to do this? I mean, it's not the most complex thing to do. It's you get celery and you go, peanut butter, and then you put raisins. Did you ever know anyone's mother or grandmother who actually built these things?
Yes, Ants on a Log epitomized just how terrible cooking was in the 1980s, because we all looked at that as something that was fancy, because it took a little bit of effort to get the peanut butter inside the concave part of the celery. The canoed out part of the celery.
That takes work?
And then drop some. No, it does. That's my point.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay, yeah.
It's like taking a can of green beans and pouring it into a pot and then cooking those and be like, oh, I slaved over dinner. Did you? I didn't see you having to do any prep for those green beans other than open the can.
Trey, you missed the seasoning salt at the end. You totally missed that part. That's the cooking part.
Okay, well, here's the other problem for me with the Ants on a Log, Chad. I hate celery. Raw celery especially. It has that cilantro effect for me, or that rye bread effect, to where it overwhelms anything else going on flavor-wise the dish.
Yeah.
And I think it's something genetic. Like, there's definitely a genetic component to the cilantro thing. I think that exists with celery as well.
It's
cannot
strong.
Do raw celery.
Yeah, it's
Some
strong.
People love it. Some people dip it in their Bloody Marys, let's say, or other things, and they, you know, they like it as part of the veggie tray to dip it with hummus or something. I can't do it. So the ants on a log. Also, since we're talking about the positive health benefits of ants on a log, since that's how it used to be sold to us back in the 1980s, the era of phony food, it wasn't even that healthy for you, because what was the peanut butter that was going in that celery each and every time?
It was Jif.
Jif.
And it was extremely healthy. What are you talking about?
Peter Pan, with all the added sugar. If you're taking straight up peanut butter that you are grinding at the grocery store, or almond butter that doesn't have sugar added, we can maybe have a conversation. But even the raisins aren't that good for you. No, by the way, celery for a vegetable? Garbage nutritionally. It does not have that much nutritional value. And I'm sorry that that hurts any 1980s mom's feelings out there, because you fed that crap to your kid to ad nauseum and now they have a little bit of a weight issue. Well, I'm sorry. You engaged in passive child abuse in the 1980s.
How dare you? I can't believe you didn't trust Peter Pan to give you healthy peanut butter back in the day.
I'm sorry, I blacked out there for the last 2 minutes. What just happened?
I got you talking about ants on a log like I wanted to. It was fantastic. Now, on the music side of things, I would recommend an old country song called Ants on a Log. My favorite version is by Randy Travis, but it is an existential country song describing us as human beings on Earth as ants on a log.
Oh, I like that.
We're really just along for the ride like ants on a log. It's a great little tune. That I love 10 times better than the actual food itself.
Yeah. Boy, I'm thinking about raisins now, and I used to really overvalue how healthy raisins for you, especially the Raisin brand raisins that aren't only in cereal that's just getting milk poured all over it, but the raisins themselves were coated in sugar, too.
I was going to say, you didn't really think those were healthy raisins, did you?
Look, I was 40 pounds overweight as a 12-year-old. I was justifying any little thing.
I know what you were doing. You were justifying eating Raisin Bran, and you thought to yourself, well, I'm not eating Fruit Loops. I'm not eating Trix.
Yeah, well, I ate plenty of peanut butter Cap'n Crunch also.
And peanut butter Cap'n Crunch, that's better than regular Cap'n Crunch, right?
Oh, this is Raisin Bran. I can have another four bowls.
fantastic.
I'm just pissed off right now that Norm MacDonald died
today,
Chad.
I am too, man. I'm trying not to think about it. By the way, in the world of Cap'n Crunch eaters, we are both in this club. Do you think your Captain Crunch eating would have been even worse or maybe a little better if you had all Crunch Berry options as a kid? Because we didn't have that. They now have an entire box that's nothing but Crunch Berries.
Oh.
And they've even got them where they're Texas size. They're even bigger than they normally are.
You can't even fit them in your mouth anymore, kids. Cool. Give them a try. That would have been better for me because I wasn't a fan of the Crunch Berries.
Okay.
I only liked the peanut butter Captain Crunch.
Oh, you didn't even like the regular?
No.
No?
Didn't even like regular Cap'n Crunch. Just peanut butter Cap'n Crunch.
The cut the top of your mouth, regular Cap'n Crunch?
Nope.
So tasty.
Well, I would let the peanut butter Cap'n Crunch really soak in that milk before eating it, too. And I would get some crunchies on top, but man, you just let that turn into that just that glob, almost a gelatinous peanut butter wheat infused glob. Oh, it was so good. And then drinking the milk afterwards, too.
If you give me all day and it's not a race, I can kill five bowls of peanut butter Cap'n Crunch without even thinking.
I probably could, too.
I'd give you five in a day for sure.
I would feel like,
if I can spread it out, I'd feel horrible.
Yeah, I could eat five in one sitting and just feel like crap for the next 3 days.
I would pass out after that, but I could get you five. All right, there's why September 14th matters to us, the good and the bad today. Rest in peace to the great Sean Adams. Died on this day back in 2017, and a lot of us have never been the same after that one. And then today, Norm MacDonald from SNL, the legendary comedian, dies at the age of 61. A 9-year battle with cancer is over for Norm. Hopefully he and his family find some peace in that, and hopefully you, the fans, find some good Norm MacDonald stuff to check out tonight. All right, up next, we will get you stems and seeds, news and notes around sports, including how many Saints staff members have tested positive for COVID, and does that mean they're not going to be able to play Carolina? We'll get into that story. Plus, still talking lots of Texas football today. Have your expectations changed if you're a Longhorn fan? This is The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
wilderness, so far from home.
Oh, I think this is one of my favorite things. This is emotional ballad Mick Jagger, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah.
This is Laugh, I Nearly Died. I am playing it because it is another Shameless Podcast Promotion Tuesday. New episode of Books on Pod out as of this morning. It is with Nick Skoun, who is the director of a new documentary that premiered on Vice last week called Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11. How did the September 11th attacks affect comedy in America? And which comedians and what jokes helped the country rebound in the weeks, months, and years that followed? Well, you can find out by watching the film after you listen to our chat at booksonpod.com.
I would definitely recommend both of those. Check out booksonpod.com for all those great conversations that Trey has. And then definitely check out that documentary, Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11. Also, it doesn't dig too far into this, but the idea of comedy itself falling down political lines after 9/11. That
yeah.
Factions begin to form inside of comedy based on where everybody is. And you didn't really know that ahead of time. But after 9/11, once things changed a little bit, then you do realize, you almost get a feeling of, oh, wait, there's this comedian, and he or she is more conservative. Oh, I never thought of it that way, but they are. Oh, well, he or she is more liberal. Or he or she is. And it never really happened before 9/11.
And then you had the fake conservative bit being played by Stephen Colbert on The Colbert Report.
Yes.
And him, I asked the director about this, him getting invited to the White House Correspondents' Dinner when George Bush was still president. I really think they thought they were bringing in a conservative pundit. Like, whoever invited him did not realize that it was shtick. And, man, we played Norm's monologue at the ESPYs from 1998 last hour. It wasn't a monologue necessarily, or maybe it was. It was like a Friars Club roast. He let Bush and so many other people in that room have it in a way that it was uncomfortable when he got done.
It really was a – every time when I saw that on the documentary, I thought, man – If people like Andy Kaufman, Mitch Hedberg, Carlin, people like that love Stephen Wright, that love to put you in an uncomfortable situation, Bill Hicks, Andrew Dice Clay, all those people that love to live in those areas, it was all for them. Because he had to fully commit to that. That room was not with him. That room was not going to laugh at what he was saying. But once it got out and everybody realized what it was, if you were with him, if you understood where he was going, it was brilliant. But it took so much guts to stay with that.
Ricky Gervais, too. That's another example.
Yeah, perfect
example.
From
the Golden Globes a few years ago, where he hammered the entire room for just how they kept the Harvey Weinstein secret for as long as they did.
God, the Weinstein, his lines about Mel Gibson that year.
Yep.
Oh, my Lord. All right, so lots of good stuff out there in that realm, but obviously a bad day for comedy because Norm MacDonald dies at the age of 61. We talked about that today, but we've also talked plenty of sports. Let's see if we can squeeze some more things in here. Stems and seeds on a Tuesday.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. The update from the NFL, 6 offensive coaches, a nutritionist, and a player, and possibly a partridge in a pear tree, all tested positive for COVID for the New Orleans Saints. Yeah, because they need more to think about. They're getting ready to play Carolina. They're actually working out at the TCU facility this week, getting ready for that game, but they don't think this will affect their ability to play. So that is really, really good news. We also talked about Clay Helton finally getting axed at USC. He is done. Clay Helton, I guess, Trey, will be reincarnated somewhere as a... He's an offensive guy?
I honestly don't
defensive
know.
Defensive guy? I'd have to look
that
up.
I would hope
up.
Defensive. With the offensive coordinators that he's had to cycle through.
I think you're right. I think he may be and if that's true, then you wonder, where is his place in this college football when normally you're going to go offensive generally, right? You're going to go with an offensive mind versus a defensive mind what will, you know, what will that be? He is, I see all offensive here.
Oh, okay.
Trey.
Well, regardless, yeah. I mean, there is still a place for defensive-minded coaches. We've seen plenty of those hires happen over the last few seasons, but he's an offensive guy, so
yeah.
I'm sure somebody else will get suckered into hiring him before too long.
Trey, he arrived in 2010 at USC as the quarterback's coach.
Okay.
That's how he showed
up. They had decent quarterbacks during his time there.
They did. There's no doubt about it. Cowboys fans, if you missed it, Lyle Collins, of course, suspended for 5 games. Jerry Jones names Terrence Steele the right tackle on one of his radio shows this week. Couldn't make up those kind of stories if I wanted to. Apparently that happened. I wonder if anybody... Did they ask Mike McCarthy if... No? Oh, Jerry did it? Okay. Cool. Neato. That's great. RBKD coming up. Rod and Kevin from the HEB, South Congress and Slaughter. They're over there by the barbecue, and they've got your chance to win Texas Tech tickets. Then at 7, it's the Longhorn Blitz podcast. You're going to want to hear that one this week as Rod, Jeff, and Matt break it all down after Texas loses to Arkansas. Back tomorrow for a Wednesday show. We've got Justin Wells at 1, and we've got Ari Temkin talking Cowboys at 2, among other things. Y'all have a good Tuesday. Cheers!